And welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. I'm Dennis Wu, sitting in for the rest of the band, who seems to be working on all kinds of great stuff for the summer. With us this afternoon on El Paso Primetime, Randy Chenault and John Brooker, and we're going to talk about something really fun, but it's also very vital for the community. It's the El Paso Veterinary Medical Association's 28th Annual Community Awards Banquet. Man, that's more than a mouthful. First off, guys, welcome to El Paso Primetime.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Last year, I went to the show, if you will, and I had a real good time.
Yeah, we had Kevin Fitzgerald last year.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun, and he's a great guy, and I'm hoping that you know, we can carry on and have another great year just like we've done. This is the 28th year, we've definitely been down the road a few times on this, and so we're getting better at what we do every year. And did you have fun last year?
I did. I really did. Yeah. I had a good time. The dinner was great.
Yeah.
The entertainment was superb, and the company was absolutely drop-dead great.
Absolutely.
Great to hang out with y'all.
Yeah, well, it's fun, you know, and that's the neat thing about it is there are people from all over the pet community that are here. I mean, it's not just veterinarians. It is the veterinary, our El Paso Veterinary Community Awards Banquet, but it is for the community. And that's what's really neat about this is because we do different things. We've had different honorees over the years. And, you know, it's always fun. It's always a good time to see. And hopefully it's everybody will have a good time this year.
Let's talk about your Community Involvement Award winner, Orlando Garza Jr.
That's correct, yeah. That's Dr. Garza. He is a veterinarian that served on the as the president of our Texas Veterinary Medical Association for the whole state of Texas, basically. John and I also serve on the board of directors for the TVMA. So it's actually been it's amazing the amount of work and time that goes into this that he has put in over the last year. I mean, the guy's probably traveled. If he's here in town for more than 3 or 4 days, it's a long weekend for him.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So that's dedication.
It is dedication. And that's why he's, obviously well deserving of this, community awards.
There's something that's really neat that I liked last year and you're doing it again this year. I guess it's always going to be a yearly thing and that's the Animal Hall of Fame inductee.
Well, yeah, we do that. Unfortunately it is not an annual thing. I mean, it's when well deserved. I mean, you know, so that we can actually, you know, really have valid recipients of this. And this year, Cleo is a ordnance dog, a bomb-sniffing dog that the Marines have used over in Afghanistan and Iraq and everything else. And this dog, fortunately, did make it out of there. Most of them don't. That's the really sad but true part of this thing. They are truly heroes that, you know, unfortunately don't always make it out. So well-deserved as well.
This will be coming up on Tuesday, May 7th. Tickets still available?
They are available. We will have tickets from the East El Paso Animal Hospital. Their number is 593-1712, I believe is what it is. And we will have tickets. Probably need to get them by no later than May 3rd, which is the Friday before.
And the guest entertainment this time around?
Is an official Texas photographer named Wyman Meinzer.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's had pictures in all sorts of different magazines, well-deserved. The pictures that I have never seen this guy personally, but pictures on his website, which is WymanMeinzer.com, are amazing. I mean, the pictures of Texas, between the Hill Country and the West Texas and Panhandle and South Texas and just all different sorts of Texas pictures, so to speak. I guess there's no other way to put it. I mean, just photos. And it's really the way that this guy can capture Texas is amazing. And he was, I guess, named as an official, the official photographer of Texas, back when Governor Bush was around. So, I mean, he's been doing this a little bit, you know, so he's grown up in Texas and here he is. So it ought to be interesting. It'll be a neat presentation.
I think so. I think the whole banquet in itself is such a party atmosphere. It really is because it's not only celebrating what you guys do for animals everywhere, not only just in the county, but all over the world virtually. But it's also a way for the community to say thank you. I think, a great way to say thank you for everything that you do for our pets so that our pets will keep on being that loving being that they are.
It really is a good time. And we have dignitaries from surrounding states and people from the state level, Texas Veterinary Medical Association, that show up every year to be a part of the banquet. We also have door prizes. Robert Bettis, the MC, is pretty funny. Every year he seems to be funny. There's also – how would you describe the – we have a classical duet and cocktails prior. So there's a lot going on, and it's really – it doesn't drag on forever either. We get in, have fun, and get done.
Yeah, that's been a goal for a while, that we don't want this to be, to where everybody's going, golly, when is this thing going to be over? So, and when we do have good entertainment, and like you said, the people that are there, that's the – and as you said, to try and, bring to light the human-animal bond and all the other stuff that goes on. And this is always during Pet Week, so it's kind of interesting. And we always have a good time, kind of trying to celebrate whatever Pet Week is all about.
And I think for our audience, I think they forget that there is such a thing as a National Pet Week, number one. And this year it's Love Your Pet, See a Vet. And it makes sense to me. I have a 14-year-old fox terrier named Xena. And the audience knows of Xena. They've seen Xena when I take her out for a walk. She takes Daddy out for a walk.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah, of course, every day.
You get to live in her house, probably, is what
it
is,
much,
right?
In that,
yeah, that's...
Yeah. She'll tell me when I get to eat.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
But that's okay. She's 14, and she's really spry. But, thanks to vets, she's 14 and healthy. Thanks to y'all.
Well, and that's one thing that I'm blessed that our profession has. We've been the beneficiary, so to speak, of advanced medical procedures and technologies that are available now. And people are always amazed that, pets get the same things that people do. And it's true. Mm-hmm. Diabetes and cancer and, all the bad things that we are all familiar with, and they get the same things. And so it's important to be in tune with your dog. And that's why, when you love your pet and you see your vet, that's kind of the concept there, that, it is a nice kind of a tie-in, so to speak, with what we're trying to promote as well.
Right. One of the things that I think we never ask, and we should, is how you guys got involved in veterinary medicine in the first place. You could choose any profession anywhere. In anything. You could have been a pastry chef. You could have been driving
a truck.
You've never
tasted my cooking. That is a problem. So pastry chef would probably not be high on my list, but,
But he knows many pastry chefs.
I'm a very good pastry eater. Let me go ahead and tell you that.
I think all of us had similar, paths where as children we're bringing home all kinds of different animals, and our parents somewhere along the line see an opportunity to say, make something out of that. But we were truly blessed with – every day you meet somebody that wanted to be a veterinarian or thought about going to vet school. And so to be able to get through that is – and then come out and have people respect the profession is truly a blessing that we all are thankful for.
Yeah, absolutely. I, as John said, we're all blessed every day, and I get to go to work. It's one of those things that, I truly feel. There's jobs that everybody kind of goes, gosh, I really get tired of doing that. But I truly enjoy going to work and doing my job. And that's one of those things that, it just – like John said, you get a calling, and I don't know that there's a way that you can really say, this was the pivotal moment in my life that I decided that I'm going to be a veterinarian. It's kind of one of those things that as long as I can remember, I just thought that's what I was going to do. And I was blessed with people in my path that allowed me to go work for veterinarians early on. And do things that, to see what it was really all about. And that's what, as a profession, we need to focus on trying to encourage, you know, to really know what it is. I mean, it is a great profession. I mean, you know, the kittens and puppies are a wonderful part of it. But there are other things that obviously, as a community, that I think we all need to bring to light and be aware of. You know, the pet overpopulation is a huge problem that we all deal with, you know, and there's a great misconception, I think, about most people, you know, wanting to breed their pets. And I mean, breeding pets is wonderful, provided you know what you're doing. And, you know, but so many people do it for the wrong reasons. And I think that's where we are right now. And until the community as a whole gets involved, we're going to have a lot of, you know, soul searching to do about what we're going to end up doing, you know, with all these pets that are loved but not necessarily cared for and, you know, or wanted. And that's kind of where we are right now. So
when we talk about overpopulation, one of the things that I've been thinking about coming into this conversation that we've been having is inbreeding. I don't think people understand inbreeding with canines and felines and that whole thing. They don't understand that there could be multiple mutation of sorts.
Genetic, the inbreeding, that there's bad genes in all of us. Inbreeding exposes those. You know, you want those genes to stay diluted. But yeah, if you're talking about, you know, people in a household, for instance, that are breeding closely related pets, that's going to cause troubles in the short run and long run.
Yeah. Well, and like John said, I mean, you know, the concept started way back probably when people were thinking that, hey, you know, that's a desirable trait in this dog and that's a desirable trait. And we're looking for a specific thing. And sometimes you get lucky and good things come out, but all too often, not so good things come out, and maybe not outwardly or whatever, but I mean, inwardly. I mean, we see a lot of genetic problems with like orthopedic issues in dogs because of the way that they're bred. And, you know, there's a lot of bad things that go on that shorten the longevity and the quality of life for these animals.
If we took a look at the English Bulldog or the Pit Bull or anything that frightens a human, in certain terms, whether it's just the overall cosmetic look or the health problem of a bulldog. Is that genetic? Is that a genetic problem?
Yeah, it's what's become normal, abnormal genes,
right,
for the
right
breed. And some of those, especially the bulldogs, their personalities are, you know, extraordinarily fun. And the vast majority of them live normal lives, yet loud, you know, all that breathing. But there is a certain percentage that we see every day, you know, or every summer that come into the clinics that can't breathe just walking down the street. It's so hot. They're overweight and they can't get air. So there's few things as miserable, I would say, in being a mammal than not being able to get good quality breath.
I'm sure you see quite a bit of that, especially in the emergency scenarios. And I think, just like John said, I mean, the problem is that, you know, again, because of the heat and because they're not developed, they have developed into something. We have developed them into something, as you're talking about inbreeding. I mean, those are things that probably in the wild you would never see a bulldog living because they would be picked off and, you know, they'd be done before way too long. And, you know, and well-meaning people as well. You know, I mean, I unfortunately, I don't see it probably as much as you do at the emergency realm. But, you know, people mean well and they'll take their dog out for a jog, you know, on a – you know, a bulldog going for a jog. I mean, it'd be like me going for a jog right now. I mean, I'd probably make it from here to the corner and, you know, I at least can stop and tell somebody, hey, I can't do it anymore. You know, for bulldogs, man, they're just not good. So, you know.
Bringing up the subject of taking dogs out for a walk, during the summertime, when is the ideal time to take a mutt out for a dog, for a spin?
Everybody's going to have a different answer to that. If they're conditioned, I mean – I go out at high noon at 105 degrees with my dogs and have no problem. But the 75-year-old grandma with the poodle that rarely gets out shouldn't do that. It's kind of like with your babies, they say dress them the way you're dressing. So if you're conditioned to do a certain thing and your pet is doing that with you, then there's really, you got to have water and you got to be able to get it shade sooner right. or later. Just use your judgment and watch the pet closely.
Yeah, I tell people, look, if it's too hot for you to be out there, then don't put your dog out there. Or conversely, if it's too cold, which doesn't happen often here in El Paso, but when we do get the cold snaps and things like that, people need to be aware that, pets, definitely are, just like us, and they require, the basic needs that we all need, and if I had to spend the night outside and even when it's, in the low 30s, that's not exactly pleasant if you're not, if you're sleeping on the concrete or something out there. So
true story. Now, there's something that I've always wanted to ask, and I never really get a chance to every time I go see our vet, Dr. Guy Johnson over on Lee Trevino's Zena's primary.
Who started this community awards thing.
Oh.
Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yes,
yeah.
he was the probably the founding father, if I would so say so.
Definitely.
He was the banquet guy for probably at least 10 years, probably the first 10 or 12 years that we did this. So, tying that back in here, yeah, guy's the guy that got it started. So.
Oh, my gosh. Well, he's been Zena's doc since she's been 6 weeks old. Now, and I never get a chance to ask him, but now that I have you two captive in the studio, when people take their dogs out for a walk, should the dog lead the owner or should the owner lead the dog?
Well, depends on who you ask,
Wait. Ask Guy.
Guy's the expert on that, right? So that's, we're going to put that back on Guy.
I would say that you're not talking to trainers, number one.
Absolutely. That's public disclaimer right there, man.
Number two, if you're talking about let's not talk about really where the dog is as opposed to the my position, but what that dog's doing to the leash. That dog is, stretching that leash to like a guitar string and pulling on your shoulder, then you probably need some training with that dog. But I think, the classic is, be on my heel. He's a left heel, so my right hand can open the door, that kind of thing. I'm not sure. But.
Yeah, talk on my cell phone is what it is, right? So, yeah. Well, and I think dogs in general, and again, I am going to second John's statement that by no means am I a obedience guy, and all you have to do is talk to my wife about my four dogs, and she'll be the first to tell you that, that's the case. But dogs need a level of respect, and it's not through, being heavy-handed as much as the way that I think you need to understand how the dog's mind works, which is, hey, I need somebody to be the leader around here, and tell me what to do. Dogs really don't want to be the guy that has to make the decisions,
Mm-hmm.
And if you can kind of tell them, hey, that's not appropriate or this is appropriate or whatever, they kind of have a pretty happy existence, And
I like to use the, ideally we all have archetypes that we try to aspire to, and I'm the archetype for my dogs. I bring the food, I bring the shelter, they look up to me,
That's nice when somebody does, right?
Yeah,
that's all I got in my house, man. My poodle worships me, but that's about it, man. Me and the dogs are, kind of right there together.
Yeah,
but
no, I have a, they call me Gandhi.
Oh, do they? Yes. John Gandhi, I think that's
okay.
Yeah. Didn't know that. That's some new bit of information for me that I might have to file away.
And secret.
Yeah, use that at a later date with John.
These microphones aren't on, are they?
Yeah, we're not.
Of course not.
We're not really. Yeah, we're just talking here, right?
But obviously, you know, we have fun with our pets, and our pets are what drives us and what keeps us happy. And one of the things that we've always known for years, even through without the academia, pets will relieve a human condition just if you let that pet just become part of your soul. You know, they're always there when you need them, and when you don't need them, they're still there anyway.
Yeah.
Unconditional love.
Yeah, they continue to find archaeologic evidence of dogs being a part of human groups, you know, further and further back. I forget what the last one was, but, you know, it's amazing how long man and dog have been together.
Yeah, and you're right about the conditions. You know, they've proven the fact through scientific testing that, you know, I mean, dogs lower blood pressure, you know, I mean, just being around dogs. And like you said, the unconditional part of it, the dogs don't carry baggage, which is kind of cool, you know. I mean, and, you know, it's not like what happened yesterday or what's going to happen tomorrow. It's like, man, what can I do for you right now is kind of what their attitude is. So,
yeah, it's a pretty cool thing. What's the most unusual thing you've seen in your practice with any kind of animal? That's not, you know, horribly destructive, but it's just kind of like, what in the world happened here?
Oh, well.
Yeah, I don't.
You see more exotic things than I do.
Right. I mean, I don't want to, you know, get blood and guts or anything like that.
No, but I mean, you've had to have seen something so unusual. It's like, well, why did this happen?
I did see a schnauzer. This is years ago when the emergency center was on Texas Avenue that had, well, they had one testicle and had an abdominal mass. You know, it was relatively older schnauzer. And I was assuming that the abdominal mass was going to turn out to be the retained testicle that had become cancerous. We get into an exploratory surgery and I find a uterus that was infected in this male dog.
Yeah.
So it was a hermaphrodite schnauzer with a pyometra. And yes, that's usually the response I get. It's
yeah,
like,
see that,
right,
now,
buddy?
Yeah. Whoa, he's right, you know. And yeah, I
top
mean,
that.
Well, here's
another one. This has a sad ending. Actually, the schnauzer did fine.
Did you neuter him too?
Yes, actually. I did find the retained testicle. It was just like it was actually smaller than the other one. There was a Chesapeake Bay Retriever, like 90 pounds, had come into the emergency center on Texas, and the guy had been in the backyard. The owner had been just chipping golf balls out of a little bucket, and when he realizes that all the golf balls are gone and he thinks the dog ate them, and it's a big dog full of golf balls, you could just take his abdomen and
roll
wiggle him. And
sound like a bucket of balls there, right?
You could tell they're in there. So we get him to I recommend surgery because you don't really know if you're throwing up a bunch of golf balls, how they're going to, you know, if they get wedged in the esophagus or, you know, what kind of strange thing could happen. But the guy doesn't want to do surgery, so we're getting the dog to throw up these golf balls, and he's throwing up one, two, three at a time. We keep taking x-rays till there's no more golf balls, but there's still a larger – it's not as dense as a golf ball, but a circular object. And I say, you know, did he swallow a tennis ball? And the guy says, yeah, but that must have been like 3 months ago. So I'm telling him the only way that tennis ball's coming out is with surgery. He doesn't have us do it. He goes – you know, leaves. 6 months later, comes back. The dog had been – he had been hosing the backyard, and the dog had been chomping at the water, you know, just playing. Slips, falls, has a seizure, and he brings him in. Dog's normal at this point. And I said, hey, did you ever get that tennis ball out of there? He's like, no, you know, we just left it. Let me x-ray him just to see. And, you know, I x-ray him, and the tennis ball is still there. A year later, he comes back, had eaten a corn cob and needed surgery, and unfortunately, he didn't do well.
Yeah,
and this was a post-op. The surgery had already been done. He had come to us that night because he was having complications and, didn't make it.
Right. The memo to myself not to get a Chesapeake.
Don't chip golf balls, man.
Not golf balls, nor tennis balls, and don't eat corn.
Well, I did have one dog that my sports dog that 1 year they brought him in with an obstruction, and we did surgery on him, and I'm pulling this thing out of the intestine, and it looked like at first I thought it was a turtle shell, and as I was pulling it out because it had these little kind of hexagonal looking design on it, and it was brown, and I thought, wow, that's weird, a turtle in this dog. And as I'm pulling it out, there was the word Sonic came out. It was one of those little Sonic kids soccer balls. The dog had crunched it down to where it became almost football shaped, and he swallowed it. And anyway, that dog did fine. And then about a year later, came back with basketball pieces in his stomach, and we ended up taking a whole
– real athlete.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, pretty athletic. And so, yeah, interesting stories. And that's, you know – just goes to show you got to watch them all the time.
Yeah.
The dog was eating his golf balls is what I want to know. You know, it's like pretty observant. Kept his head down, I guess, during the chip,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You
know, so.
I hope he's not in law enforcement.
Yeah, well.
You know, I didn't say that. That was just that Tourette's syndrome thing.
I don't think you heard a comment from me and Brooker over here, man, that's for sure. So nothing going on there, so.
Holy cow. So sage advice going into the spring and the summer for taking care of pets just on the fly.
We should all lead a healthy lifestyle. So the pets tend to eat way too much because we eat way too much. They tend to not get enough activity because we don't get enough activity. Now, the wild dog, you know, the coyote, whatever, wolf, travels probably miles a day just to get, you know, maybe they'll have a fresh kill on a hunt, but usually they're eating, you know, other animals' waste or, you know, finding carcass, whatever. So they're on a lean, high-fiber diet most of the time and a lot of traveling. So, you know, those are the things. If you want to stay away from the emergency center, have an active pet that eats right.
Yeah, and obviously the more common things that we can all do, you know, routine vaccinations and good well care, heartworm prevention is real important. Even though it's been so dry, we don't see as many mosquitoes, but you know, heartworms do occur. In fact, they did a study 1 year; they were looking for tuberculosis out in the middle of the desert, and we're, you know, trapping wild canids, foxes, dogs, coyotes, and don't know how the TB thing came out, but about over 50% of those dogs had heartworms in them living out in the middle of the desert. So,
wow.
Yeah.
If you sleep outside, you'll get bit by mosquitoes,
yeah.
No matter how dry.
Yeah. So interesting, you know, but good routine stuff that you just need to be, you know, and that's what we do. That's what our job as veterinarians is, to kind of inform you and keep you up to speed on what's important and what's good for your pet. And that's where coming to see veterinarians is important.
Very cool. Randy Chenault, John Brooker, thank you so much for coming in, talking not only about pets and everything, but also the 28th Annual Community Awards Banquet coming up on Tuesday, May 7th. Tickets still available?
Tickets are available, and you can, again, reach them at 593-1712. Talk to Annie over there. She'll get you tickets.
And it is at the Camino Real downtown.
That's right.
And a lot going on downtown, so it's worth it just to get down there and take a walk around and go to the banquet.
Well, you know, like you said, the food's good. We're going to have, you know, good food, good entertainment, and lots of good camaraderie. So hope to see everybody there.
Very cool. Mi casa, su casa. So anytime anything comes up, even if you just want to come in and just chat a little bit about taking care of pets, we'd love to have you.
Well, thanks.
Great. Thank you,
appreciate
sir.
That.
I'd like to thank our news and public affairs director, Louis Sines, for twiddling the dials behind the glass for this edition of El Paso Primetime. Louis Sines is up next with Perspectives. Have a great weekend. Don't forget to make your pledge to KTEP.